Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, July 6th, 2018, and with me today, Kelly Gaumont. How are you, Kelly?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
I'm well, and we so rarely have a chance to do a show, just the two of us, so I thought today would be a great opportunity to make that happen.
Excellent. Yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah, so thanks for being here. And I need to remind everyone, I'm speaking at WordCamp Denver. WordCamp Denver is July 28th and 29th. I'm speaking on the 28th, and I'm talking about podcasting and WordPress. So you have to come and see me speak, because it'll be fun to hang out. And my we, or my you, of course, Kelly, if you're out here, it'll just be a giant party. But
well, of course,
my you extends out to everyone else.
Yes.
So, yeah, come hang out. WordCamp is a lot of fun. And I know some of the other speakers, and the presentations are going to be awesome. And the end of the day keynote is not to be missed. I'm not going to say what is going to be in the keynote, but I've heard some of the notes from the presentation. It's just going to be awesome. So, you have to come. Anyhow, so we should talk about some other stuff today too. How about we start with this whole thing with Intel chips and Apple, and I guess to condense it down so everyone knows where we're jumping in, there's a report that says that Apple is going to stop using Intel's modem chips in 2020. Is that right?
I think that was, yeah, that's, they're sort of shopping for the 2020 chip, and sources say, and, you know, they, one of the items cited as a data source for this story is internal company communications. So, if true, you know, which I hate to say, but if it's true, the fallout from it is the part that to me was so fascinating.
And the fallout being that Intel, knowing that Apple is done buying their modem chips, they're just shutting down that whole division or that whole product and the team.
They're assigning those employees to other teams. Like, there's not going to be that particular modem chip development project anymore.
So basically, they had this entire project going just for Apple.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
And then Intel did. This is where we are. Apple is a company that now, if they stop buying your chip, that project is done.
That's amazing.
And not just any company. Like, I could see this happening if it were some...
If it was Joe's modem chip supplier.
Yeah, you know, Fast Eddie's phone chip supply. Like, I could see where maybe Fast Eddie's going to have a hard time keeping all those employees. But it's Intel. And that, to me, is the part that is so interesting.
Yeah, it says a lot about how specialized Intel can be with the products they make. But it also says a lot about the volume that Apple buys when they're buying for iPhones. I mean, they're buying so much that Intel can have a whole division just for this modem chip for Apple.
Yeah. And that to me was pretty interesting. And the other thing that I don't know is what they're going to do, what Apple's going to do instead, which is the part I'm the most interested in. Not because I'm a particular cell phone hardware fan or spectator or anything like that, but I'm always sort of curious where Apple's going to go with this kind of stuff, because as we've seen, Apple can set trends in a lot of different ways, like moving their computers to flash storage, for example, and having everything have an SSD in it. Mm-hmm. Or you know, a lot of people don't remember that plugging stuff into your computer used to be a crapshoot. And then at some point, and then Apple came out with USB ports on the iMac, and that was a thing. And this is what we do now. And you don't get floppy disks anymore. And you just use this little rectangle on the side and you plug stuff into that. And that's what we do now.
You remember when we had to turn our computers off to plug something in?
Yes. I remember it well. I was doing tech support for SCSI devices at the time.
Oh, I bet your liver still hurts.
A little bit, yeah.
Oh.
Only because it got better once someone explained to me that what SCSI stands for is system can't see it.
Yeah, then it all makes sense.
Yeah, and then, you know, official things that tech support would have to tell people are things like, scanners like to be at the end of the SCSI chain. You might be better off reorganizing that way. Things like that.
Yep, I remember that. I remember having to put my CD burner at the front of the chain.
Yeah. And then we had, we had ADB ports, and there were serial ports, and there were, I think it was it DB2 or something like that? That was like another thing that you could plug stuff in with. Mm-hmm. And there was all these different ways. And then, you know, only some of them would work on certain computers. And, you know, like, it was terrible, kids. In the olden days, it was the Wild West of holes in the side of your computer. And it was awful. And then at some point, Apple settled on USB, and somehow that made other computer companies decide, yeah, we're going to do that too. And they did. And Apple was the first to get rid of the floppy drive. And then they realized, you know, the world didn't end. So other computer makers got rid of the floppy drives as well. And, you know, Apple went to USB 2, and Apple's Thunderbolt ports are a thing you can find on other computers. And, like, you know, DVI, when that was a thing back in the day, you know, and FireWire, like, you know, for video and stuff, there are still people using FireWire devices today.
I actually have a couple FireWire drives in my whole mix. Yep.
Yeah. And I, so that to me is the reason this is interesting. You know, Apple's new computers are USB-C, period. And we've heard rumors that maybe the next phone won't be any thinner because they're going to put a USB-C port in it, so everyone can standardize on one cable to charge them all.
But that's not happening.
Let me have this one, Jeff.
All right. I will just let you live in your special fantasy world on this one. I will not take that from you.
I'll leave
that to Tim Cook.
It's not like it's 30 pin. I mean, you know, anyway, so it would make a lot of sense if they would do it. I think it would be great. I don't think the phones need to be any thinner, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll talk about that at another time when I come back on the show. But the thing that I was interested that Apple had the power to make a team like that disappear just by not buying those chips anymore, because it tells me that they're pretty specialized. But also it was just interesting to me that, you know, it was Intel that was having to do this. And I'm curious what Apple's move is going to be if it's not buying these chips from Intel. Then who are they going to get them from?
That's a really good question. The intriguing part to me is that Apple's in the middle of this ongoing fight with Qualcomm over patent royalties related to modem chips. Mm-hmm. Into other things, but Apple doesn't want to be buying modem chips from Qualcomm anymore because they're really pissed off at the company. So if they're ditching Intel, does that mean they've decided just to roll over on this one and just get all of their modem chips from Qualcomm? Or, you know, there's this report that came out that Apple is in negotiations with MediaTek, is that right?
Yeah, MediaTek.
And they're a smaller modem maker, meaning smaller company, not like smaller chips. And so, you know, Apple could turn to them potentially, but they're a smaller company. Are they really going to be able to ramp up to the volume that Apple needs?
Yeah.
To be Apple's sole supplier? Or is Apple working on their own modem chip?
Which, at this point, you know, I think all of those things are equally likely. I'm just curious where it's going to end up.
Yeah, me too. This will be an interesting one to watch. We could keep talking about this, but I want to make sure that we get to talk about the other thing. So I'm just going to move us over to that topic now. And I just realized it is so much easier for me to move us to other topics when I have just you or just
when
John.
I'm the only one you have to move.
Yeah, when I have to move just one of you, it totally works. When it's both of you, it's totally cat herding.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that in a confrontational way or complaining.
No, it just is. John and I just, you give us one topic and we're off to the races, and we have a hard time we have a hard time because you always pick topics for us that are so interesting that we really want to dig into. That's what's happening.
Yeah, and seriously, there are some days where I introduce the topic and you guys run with it to the point that I could just set like an 18-minute timer, so I have a counter for the introduction and the outro, and I can leave. And when my wrist gets a little tap from my Apple Watch, then I could just sit back down and say, okay, well, so I wish we could keep talking, but we're out of time. And for all anyone knows, I've done that. I haven't really, but maybe I have.
But maybe.
Anyhow, the other topic. I wanted to talk about this whole thing with Twitter and their APIs and the impact this is having on third-party app developers, especially in light of the blog post that it was Jed that posted it. Jed Mayhew.
Jed Mayhew. Yes.
Did I just say Jed?
Yes, you did.
Oh, well, I switch back and forth between GIF and GIF, so maybe it's the same Jed and Ged. And I just can't help myself. Anyhow.
Well, Ged posted a blog post yesterday. I'm just going to dig you out of that hole.
Thank
you. Ged posted a blog post yesterday with a really clever title for a really sad thing. And the title of the post is Push Nopeifications. And the reason that this is on the Icon Factory's blog, there'll be a link in the show notes.
Yes, there will.
And there's an update for Twitterific, both on iOS and macOS, that basically has to take away the Apple Watch app and nukes push notifications. Because at some point, Twitter's going to deactivate that API. And long story short, it is cost prohibitive for Twitterific to continue to do that, which
it's
also means that
for anyone, any company
for anyone
to do it.
Yes. For literally anyone to be able to do this.
And we're talking about the licensing fees that developers would have to pay to Twitter for push notifications, because they pay per user, essentially.
Yes. So if you're using a third party app for Twitter, lots of people are, whether it's Tweetbot or Twitterific or I know there's others and I just can't think of any of them, because those are the two that I have. If you are using those with like live streaming, like, you know, you turn it on and you just let the updates pour in at the top or at the bottom of your timeline, and you just get to keep watching them go by. That's going away. And so are push notifications. So when somebody replies to you, when somebody likes your tweet or retweets you or follows you, and you get those little pop-ups on your phone or on your watch, all of that is going away.
Except in Twitter's own apps, which, by the way, we really don't have now.
Right. There is no more Mac app, basically. It's not under development. I thought I had seen somewhere that like it didn't work in certain circumstances on High Sierra. So, yes. Benevolent
so
neglect.
Basically, Twitter is saying, if you use an Apple product, just use our website.
Yes. And part of the reason that this is a problem is because it would be $2,900 a month for 250 users.
And we're talking 250 about users. Thousands of users.
Tens of thousands easily. If you can scale out my experience, I don't know anybody who's using an official Twitter app or the Twitter website in order to interact with Twitter. They're all using a third-party application. It's not something that's official. At least on iOS. I know on macOS there are people who are using stuff that is semi-official. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think that once this is broken, so is my usage of Twitter. And yeah, I don't pay anything for it, but it's going to make me be there less, because I'm going to be notified less often that somebody is trying to interact with me. So I'm not going to notice. And if I don't notice, I'm not going to go open it. So one of the things that I'm sort of assuming is going to happen, I'm going to go ahead and say that this is a thing that will happen, is that people are going to go to other platforms. People who are on Twitter are going to spend less time on Twitter because Twitter isn't getting their attention anymore.
And yeah, that's true. Yeah.
To me, it's that simple. Like, if I see that somebody replied to me on Twitter, I am very likely to go open that up and find out what they're saying. If, or, you know, likes or retweets or whatever. I'm generally going to go and do that. Go check it out. Who was it? What did they say? Who followed me? What does their profile look like? Whatever. And I am not going to have the, I'm not going to have the opportunity to do that. So without Twitter jumping up and reminding me occasionally, I'm probably not going to end up there as much. So I feel like once, and I'm sure we'll end up with an article about this at some point, but like, now that you know that Facebook is giving all your information to, you know, just everybody, like, you know, you kind of want to limit your interaction there. And if Twitter is making it harder for you to use Twitter, and you kind of don't want to be there, so then where are you going to end up? And I'll tell you, the one that I have enjoyed the most is micro.blog.
Yeah, I knew you were going there.
I went there, and it's really nice there, and I like it a lot.
Yeah, I haven't been using micro.blog very much, and it's an inertia thing, because there's so much of what I'm doing today that's in Twitter.
Yes.
But I'm thinking about switching over to micro.blog as my primary input and let it feed out to Twitter for me.
I would suggest doing that. And part of the reason I would suggest doing that is because you don't have to pay for micro.blog's own hosting services. If you have a WordPress site, you can set up your WordPress site to integrate with micro.blog automatically. It's beautiful. It's not complicated at all. Even I can manage it. And it's nice. And we don't, and you know, I know people involved with building micro.blog, and they're not people who are going to go start charging fees like this in order to intentionally break other apps. Like, somebody at one point had posted about, like, I wrote this app so that I could interact with micro.blog on my phone. And Manton, who built micro.blog, is like, hooray, that's really great. I hope other people do it too.
Yeah. Now, I feel,
because the point of microblog is that your stuff is yours.
Right. So, okay. So here's the thing that I can't remember off the top of my head. Uh-huh. The integration where I can have stuff just push automatically to Twitter and Facebook, that's a paid upgrade, right? Or am I getting that wrong?
I don't remember.
And neither do I. But, I mean, whatever. They need some money to survive. So if that's the cost, then whatever.
I think if you want full-on cross-posting with whatever RSS feed you want, I want to say, if that's the one that I'm thinking of, that it's like $2 a month. And the most you can pay them is $5 a month for an account. And I really like it. So I haven't done a lot of posting there. I've done a lot of lurking. I read a lot of other people's timelines, and I haven't done as much posting there, which is going to change as that becomes a place where I can be notified of activity and talk about it. So there you go.
Yeah, you got the pricing right. I just looked it up. You know, like I didn't have technology in front of me to do something like go to the website and look.
Well, you also have a very loud keyboard, so sometimes it's hard to do that while we're recording.
Yeah. But I type very quietly.
And one of the other things that I really like about micro.blog is that if you have like the developer foo to whip up something cool and webby that you want to integrate with micro.blog, you totally can. And it's awesome. And it's great. So I am probably going to end up there. I've been saying for a while in other places that you can find me on Twitter. You should find me on micro.blog. And I'm going to continue to say that. I think what I might end up doing once it goes away is just start telling people that you should find me on micro.blog, the end, because if you go find me on Twitter and follow me, I'll never know. Now, they haven't, Twitter hasn't said when they are deprecating this API. The announcement was August 16th, 2018, because it was supposed to be like June, and there was enough pushback that that got changed. And I don't know that they're going to change it again. And I don't understand how this makes them money. And I don't, because I don't get near the abuse of some people, I don't find it as hard to be on Twitter as some people do. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's hard or even impossible for other people to be on Twitter. And I get that. And they don't seem interested in doing anything. So as soon as it becomes a platform where I'm going to have to pay money for it or something, I'm not interested, because they're not going to do anything about the people who threaten my life on a regular basis. And I don't like that.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
So Kelly, here's my take on Twitter and making money. I think what they're doing is trying to drive everyone out of third-party apps and into their own completely controlled environment, where,
because then they can get the advertisements in front of you, which the third-party apps aren't showing right now.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think this is all about controlling the advertising view for their users.
And I wouldn't mind the advertising view. Twitterific used to have an advertising view. There were ads in it, and they were fine because they weren't obtrusive. They were actually relevant things. It wasn't just, you know, the check doesn't bounce, so we're going to run your ad, you know, in Twitterific. And like, I've just always loved Twitterific. It was so useful, so handy. It's such a nice app. And, you know, I jumped on the Kickstarter immediately as soon as Project Phoenix was announced, when they were going to, you know, rebuild so from the ashes. And, you know, and I'm still going to wear my t-shirt, but I'm going to be really sad that I'm not going to be. But now it's like a
memorial shirt. I mean, the app isn't going away, but a lot of the functionality that makes it useful is. Right.
And later this year, it's not going to end up being useful. And I'm going to be really sad about that. Twitterific's been one of my favorites from the get-go, and I'm going to be very sad to see its utility decline.
Yeah, same thing for Tweetbot, and I've always jumped back and forth between Twitterific and Tweetbot, depending on which one leapfrogs the other's features. You know, with their updates,
I usually end up with separate accounts, like to make sure I don't accidentally post something in the wrong place. I will have set up in Twitterific and then something else set up in Tweetbot. That's usually where I end up. And so, yeah, I have both of those installed. I don't use like Tweetings or there's another one that I can't think of, or any of the other ones that are third party apps. And I'm sad about that, but I'm sad for them too, is what I'm trying to say, that this is basically messing up everybody, because Twitter can't get its revenue generating poop in a group, and they're taking it out on all of these guys instead. And that's not cool.
It's not cool. Also not cool. We're out of time.
I know.
So we have to wrap up. Kelly, thank you for joining me today.
You're more than welcome. I'm so happy to be here.
It's been fun getting to do a one-on-one show with you.
Yes.
Yeah. And listeners, thank you for joining us. I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. We'll see you again on Monday.